So a fellow is going to arrive,
right,
an individual, and he's going to be a person who's very travels, because the verb here is halak, which means to walk, to means to travel, to journey. So this individual, he is going to be best known for his travels, and he is going to claim to be a guide. And then this individual now is going to take advantage of those who lack what is needed. That those who have a scarcity of something absolutely vital, causing them to be bereaved and diminished to nothingness. As we move forward here, we're going to, because God's going to use this travel again concept, we're going to consider the travels of Paul, who is the only one that of all the people who could have been at this point considered for mass deception. Because if God's going to say, I'm 1000 BCE, I'm giving you a prophecy about one person who's going to do a lot of traveling, and that they're going to bereave those who are unaware, specifically of his Torah. There's only one of the potential candidates amongst the likes of, for example, Rabbi Akiba and Muhammad and Paul, who would fit this bill, that are known for the travels. And that's Paul.
Right.
And
it becomes real clear.
Now, I will tell you that knowing the Torah would not prepare you to necessarily reject Rabbi Akiba, because Rabbi Akiba based everything that he had to say on the Torah. In fact, his Talmud are arguments before and against and regarding the Torah. He doesn't reject the Torah. He just interprets the Torah to the liking of his religion, rabbinic Judaism. But in the case of Muhammad, what he says is so utterly stupid that if you're a Muslim, you could be almost wholly ignorant as a Muslim and recognize, now this is ridiculous. This guy is parading around. Yeah, he's a terrorist. He's a mass murderer. He's a pedophile. He's a rapist. His diatribe is immoral. It's disjointed. He claims that the sun goes to bed in a muddy spring at night. He claims that the two-horned one, which is Alexander the Great, was a Muslim, and that he went to preach to extraterrestrials that reside in the muddy spring where the sun goes nighty-night. I mean, you don't have to know the Torah to know. No, that's stupid. But the one person who will fool you if you don't know the Torah is Paul.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's any other candidate. We've only had one statement here, and I don't think there's any other candidate.
Well, just the travel alone disqualifies just about everybody.
Yes. Now, it goes on to say, a confusing and incorrect man, masculine, singular. This is Adam, person. Individual human being, a singular male, an unjust, dishonest, evil, and vain individual-ish person, singular, masculine, once again, a lone individual, travels about, halak, with speeches, which are wrong, false, crooked, perverting, and corrupting. Well, if there was any other candidate, we're two statements in. We've got another 23 to go, and we've narrowed it down to a singular individual, at least if you're going to be reasonable and rational about this.
Well, just to toss one in, just to... Mm-hmm. Sweeten the pot a little bit on Equash, mm-hmm. or Equashuth, or mm-hmm. is from Aquash.
And Quashoth, right.
Yeah, Quashoth, okay.
Which was, I translated it, which are wrong, false, crooked, perverting, and corrupting. So the this person's speeches, his peh, the words spoken out of his mouth, are
now here's what
wrong,
the,
false, crooked, perverting, and corrupting.
Right, and that's good. It gets even more interesting because the root is to twist, to declare me guilty, and pervert.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the reason pervert is important is because, as those of us who have read Question and Paul and have been gone back and checked it, he declares himself a pervert. He's, by any stretch of imagination, so.
Yeah, he does.
Now, we're narrowing it down
Paul,
to you once again. Yeah. You can't get Paul out of this if you wanted to.
No. Now, I'm going to address the pervert accusation that you've just leveled against Paul, and then we're going to talk about his travels.
Okay.
Paul wrote the most ridiculous, the most utterly insane bit of oratory in Romans 7 that I probably have ever read. And that's saying a lot, because his ode to government in Romans 13, where he says that all governments are for good, that they're established from God, they only use the sword for good, you should submit to them. You know, recognizing that governments have been against governments and have raised the sword against other people, and that the world has been at war with everyone, and currently is at war. I mean, if you think that this is of your government, then since it's at all governments, then what is it about the Islamic State that you think is good? You know, how is it possible that the Greek government and the Roman government could both be good when they were warring against each other, and both appointed by God when they were killing one another? How could you think that the government of Nazi Germany was good and of God? Because he says the only authority comes from God, so all governments are from God. That Nazi Germany, that government was good.
That's from God, then.
So you know, Romans 13 is pretty insane. Right on the face of it. But Romans 7 is the dumbest thing anybody ever wrote that is at least considered to be a sane individual. And what Romans 7 basically says is that a woman is freed of the obligation of the Torah in the same way she is freed by the death of her husband. That when the husband died, she is freed from the Torah of her husband. Now, there is no Torah of the husband. And a woman is not enslaved or captive in any way to her husband, even when she is married to him. And so the freedom, you know, the whole premise is stupid. But what Paul goes on to say is he says that is the Torah is what made me a sexual pervert. He says, I wouldn't even have known what a sexual pervert was if it wasn't for the Torah. So it's the Torah that made me a pervert. That's like saying that the red light at the intersection is what made me hit the accelerator, which is why I plowed into that car and killed everybody in it. You know, that's like saying that the code of conduct that is in within any organization's operating procedures is what causes you to violate it. But anyway, Paul claims that he says I am a sexual pervert because the Torah made me a sexual pervert.
Well,
what's interesting, of course, is the Torah doesn't have much to say about sex.
Yeah.
You know, this whole fixation. The whole fixation with being Victorian in the sense of don't be showing those breasts if you're a girl. Don't be wearing a short skirt now. Don't you be flirting. Don't you be having, romantic relations with some boy or girl out there. And, the Christians say that, that it's Christian morality. Well, I'm telling you, God has very little to say about sex. I mean, He says, you know, I don't like it when guys sleep with guys, girls sleep with girls. I don't like it when boys sleep with their mothers. I don't like it when the brothers and sisters sleep together. I don't like it when you attempt to have sex with animals. There's some things that I want to tell you that are not healthy. Yeah, you ought not do those things.
And good for you.
Yeah, but I don't think he ever says, you know, you ought not kiss the that pretty girl that you're on a date with. So, Paul claimed to be a pervert. But beyond, and there's not a whole lot of people claiming to speak for God. That in their foundation, I mean, Galatians is Paul's foundational letter, but the religion of Christianity is really based on Romans.
Absolutely.
It's Paul's ultimate treatise.
It's a masterpiece,
yeah.
Is what they call it.
Yeah, Paul's masterpiece on Christianity. It's the basis of the Christian church. And in the seventh chapter, he admits to being a sexual pervert. So, yeah, that's a pretty good clue that this person is going to be a, that this person's words is going to reveal them a pervert.
Well, it's not that somebody couldn't be a pervert. It's the fact that he pointed it out. I mean, he identifies himself.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, to be fair, I don't think that is the actual intent in the sense of we think of a sexual pervert as what, you know, what Paul was admitting to. The pervert, to pervert is a verb, this is actually being used as a noun, so I guess maybe it is reasonable, but to pervert as a verb is to corrupt, to alter, to change in such a way that what was there is no longer considered valid, which is precisely what Paul did to the Torah. In fact, he called what he would dismiss as the old system, which is now called the Old Testament, he would dismiss it as pornography.
Yeah.
And in Galatians, in fact, very early in Galatians, first chapter, he calls that Yahweh's Torah, prophets, and Psalms, the old system, pornography, poneros in the Greek. So that's the kind of perversion we're talking about here with this this word, but the word does form the basis of what is considered a perversion of normal sexuality. For example, bestiality, incest, homosexuality are a perversion of the normal, healthy function of sexuality.
Right.
Okay. That being the case, let's talk about Paul's travels. This man's message, clearly, Paul's message, would be confusing, incorrect, mystifying and baffling, deceitful and destructive. Yahweh is alerting us to the arrival of an individual, however, who would be best known for his travels. There's only one man who claimed to speak on behalf of the God of Abraham who traveled extensively. Now, there's some people God hated, like Hadrian. God hates Hadrian. I mean, I can't wait to be at Hadrian's trial. And he traveled extensively. But Hadrian never claimed to speak for the God of Israel. He wanted to obliterate all references to the God of Israel. So there's only one who claimed to speak for him. That would be Paul, who traveled extensively. He was confronted and opposed in Jerusalem and Yehuda by the disciple Shimon Kefish. He was in Theopolis and Apollina and in Philippi in Macedonia. He was in Antioch and Damascus, Syria. He was in Antipatris en route to Caesarea, both in Greece. He was at the Appii Forum along the Appian Way in Rome. Assos in Mysia, as well as in Athens, Greece. Paul's long walk through the Gentile world took him to Attalia and Pamphylia, Berea, which lies west of Thessalonica, a city whose inhabitants Paul wrote two very hostile letters. And speaking of expressing hostility, Paul wrote two additional letters to the residences of Corinth along the Isthmus of Greece. because they, like the Thessalonians and the Galatians, immediately rejected Paul's message. He would sail to Paphos and Salamis on the island of Cyprus in the eastern Mediterranean, and then walk through Derbe and Troas in Asia Minor, both multiple times. But it was in Ephesus where he demonstrated his opposition to the disciple Yahochanan, commonly known as John, where he was, which is what really caused him to be condemned by Yosha in Revelation. Paul's journey through history took him to fair havens on the island of Crete, Iconium and Lystra, both in today's Turkey. He was, of course, born and raised in Tarsus. His travels took him to Malta, an island off the coast of Rome, to Mytilene on the island of Lesbos, to Mytilus in Asia Minor, Myra and Patara in Lycia, Neapolis in Philippi, Perga in Pamphylia, and to Puteoli on the Gulf of Naples outside of Rome, in addition to Regium. And speaking of Rome, prior to the popes, Paul was the only man to claim on behalf of the God of Israel that he was doing so in the city of Rome, in the very heart of the beast. He was also in the Phoenician cities of Sidon and Tyre, in addition to Syracuse on the coast of Sicily. Now, considering the fact that all of this is documented throughout Acts, because of the words Paul spoke and wrote in these places, it's obvious why Yahweh identified this man based upon his halak travels.
I have a book that lays out some very strong research on while he was in Rome, supposedly being captive. He wasn't captured mm-hmm. or imprisoned, and he actually mm-hmm. made it all the way to England from Spain, as well as there, through Brittany, which would, to me, would say something about his, to me, what he's doing is marking all his territory.
Mm-hmm.
And his,
yes, like a dog.
All of those places, and in particular, the England, which became, you know, the Roman Empire, I mean, the English Empire, likened to the Roman Empire, and then on to us. I mean, well, it makes perfect sense if that's true. But
I'm convinced that, well, the things that are absolutely known is that the people that Paul spoke to in Galatians and Thessalonica and in Corinth rejected him. And we know this because Paul's letters to each of those communities demeans those he spoke to. And he says, you know, how in the world could you have changed so quickly after I left? You know, what's wrong with you people? You are morons for having rejected my testimony. And, you know, to hell with you. And so we know that those who heard him rejected him. We also know that when he went into Jerusalem on the for the Jerusalem summit with the disciples, that Shimon Kefish, Peter, cut him up and spit him out. They called him a liar. And we know that he was ruthless against Yahochanan in his testimony and condemned Shimon Kefish. So we know that he was in direct opposition to Yosha's disciples. We know that he only quoted Yosha once, and the time that he quoted him, he misquoted him, got him wrong. And that's in all 13 letters, only one citation, and the one citation he got wrong. So we know a fair amount about the nature of this guy. And we know that he viewed the message of the disciples as being so wrong as to be condemning, and that in his letters to Timothy, he says, you know, we need to go in there and tear them away from that message and make sure they reject that message, and we start all over again. And then we know in his last letter to Timothy, he said, you know, it's all over. I'm all alone. Everyone has rejected me.
Too bad.
It is likely, it's likely at that point that he was in Rome, but it is extraordinarily unlikely that he was in a Roman prison. He wrote on behalf of Rome, He took on a Roman name. He was a Roman citizen. He didn't do anything that Rome would have opposed.
No, not at all.
So, no. It's highly unlikely. And
the only point is how much of a liar he is through everything.
The Romans were meticulous historians. Now, I want to tell you that somewhere, and particularly at this phase, Roman history was meticulously chronicled. Roman history becomes a blur once Christianity takes hold, because the historians are about as honest as the church itself, and they recast history to serve their interest. Like the whole Christian period of torture and of being burnt by Nero on posts to light his gardens, it's all rubbish. The Constantinian conversion to Christianity and seeing the cross burning in front of the sun and hearing under this sign conquer never happened. It's all Christian religious myth with people pretending to be historians. So it is hard at this point, when there is no contemporaneous writing as to where Paul went, because at this point, Paul was a nobody.
Yeah.
He was wholly rejected. Had it not been for Marcion recognizing the Gnosticism in Paul's letters and resonating with that, and then making hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of copies of Paul's letters, and forming a New Testament based upon Paul's letters, we would never have heard of him. I think he just faded into oblivion. You say that you think he went to
Britain. It's pretty compelling that he at least made made the trip. So he didn't seem to stand still. He, once again, like most preachers, get out of town and go to the next place.
But, yeah, that's right. Yeah, you got caught with your hand in the till.
I just thought it was interesting that if that's true, because we've certainly adopted so much of Pauline lifestyle. It's amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Wherever he goes, he touches.
Yeah. So let's go back and because now we're dealing with a single man again. It's being reemphasized, and then we will continue. Because this is all a continued sentence. So this individual, God says of him, a confusing and incorrect man, an Adam, a singular person, an unjust, dishonest, evil, and vain, egotistical, deceitful, invalid, and unreliable, false, harmful, relationally damaging, untrue and fraudulent, religious and troublesome individual. Singular. Again, masculine, a lone individual. Travels about, actually walks, literally going through life, with speeches, words of his mouth, which are wrong, false, crooked, perverting and corrupting, which are wickedly distorting and misrepresent the meaning of something important, twisting it, misapplying it, corrupting it with distortions, using circuitous and serpentine reasoning. Now, before we continue with this,
mm-hmm.
I would tell you that the thing that finally alerted me to the fact we had a real snake on our hands with Paul
mm-hmm.
was in Galatians, as he starts his attack on the Torah, his first citation is from Chabaouk, where he claims that the Torah cannot save because we live by faith. And the passage that he's quoting, he not only pulls out of context, but he only quotes a small part of the sentence. He doesn't even quote the full sentence, and he doesn't translate it correctly from Hebrew into Greek. And where God is saying that the only solution to man's ills is to know and rely upon his Torah, Paul, by pulling it out of context, shortening it so that it's the full sentence isn't even there, and then misrepresenting what was said conveyed the opposite of what God had said in his Torah. Paul's message does exactly what this says, and he does it every single time. Every time he quotes something from the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, it's always the same. Always out of context, always truncated, always misrepresented, and he always uses his resulted bastardization to try to prove a point that's the opposite of what God is saying.
So it's taken 2,000 years for somebody to stand up and say, you know, this guy's a liar, and nobody...
Yeah.
Beyond, and it's unequivocal.
Well, you know, 1,000 years before he wrote the first word, God stood up and said.
Well, God did, yeah.
This man's a liar. Yeah, this man's a liar. Yeah, this man's a liar. He's a fraud. This is the technique that he's going to use. And if you're not aware of my Torah, he's going to fool you. Moving on, we read, with a sinister winking of the eyes, he subtly signals the vacillating nature of his proclamations by shifting about regarding circumcision with his stance, all while casting aspersions with his fingers. Okay, well, what do you think that Yahweh is referring to when he talks about a sinister winking, a karatz? You know, when I was in business, I no matter what business I was in, as the founder of that business, I was the person most responsible for selling what the business had to offer.
Mm-hmm.
And I grew up in business as a sales and marketing guy.
Yeah.
And so I learned really quickly when I'm making a presentation to read the buyer, to read the audience. And I could tell when the audience was with me, when the audience couldn't wait for me to finish and be done with me. And you know early on, you never have to, if you can read people, you never have to ask the question. You never have to ask for the order. And I also got to the point where in business, you're constantly forming partnerships with various people to get things done. And you also look at their eyes as they're talking to you. Most people, you know, look at the mouth so that they're trying to use its position to help them understand the words that are being said. But I always felt you could learn the most, better understand the speaker, if you looked in their eyes. They can't look you back in the eye. If they can't hold a glaze, if their eyes are winking, if you will, unable to focus on you,
right.
They aren't telling you the truth. It's really hard to look somebody in the eye and lie to them. That's why even in the people who are expert now at looking at facial expressions,
mm-hmm.
They always look to the eyes.
Yeah.
Now, Paul once wrote, and I believe it was in Corinthians, that he would pretend to be what he wasn't. To take advantage of people. He said, if it's a Jewish audience, I'll pretend to be Jewish. If it's a Gentile audience, I'll pretend to be Gentile. If the audience is Torah observant, I'll pretend to be Torah observant, even though I'm not. If it's not Torah observant, then I'm not Torah observant. I'll be whatever I need to be to take advantage of people. Oh, that's a sinister winking right there.
Mm-hmm.
As much as it gets. Now, this next statement is, of course... one of those that just go, oh, my goodness. It is almost always just translated that he shuffles his feet. Because regel can be feet. It also means stance.
Okay.
And so they just lead malal as shuffling. But, you know, that's not malal's primary meaning. If you look up malal, you'll see that A number one, first definition of ma'al is circumcision.
Yeah.
And so he subtly signals the vacillating nature of his proclamations by shuffling about regarding circumcision. Whoa.
That a killer.